If I've told you once, I've told you 100 times. This is the news, according to me. And it's a fine Wednesday afternoon, I guess. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is the 100th episode, and you're here to enjoy it with thousands of other people. Hundreds of thousands, if not millions. Or possibly billions. By now, who knows? If you're just listening to this, it could have been a year ago, so who knows what's going on there. So the had the TNE to Me singers in today, and they were pretty excited about what was going on. And welcome aboard. Welcome to the 100. I better slow down. I'm drinking peach hot tea with a lot of sugar in it. Just so you know what kind of show this is going to be. It's going to be peachy. I had the TNE to Me singers in a little bit earlier, and one singer was a little bit off, but I decided to leave it in. Wasn't going to cut that guy because he was a little bit tender today, and didn't want to hurt his feelings. So I'm announcing to the world that he wasn't a very good singer. But hopefully he won't listen to the broadcast. So this is the 100th episode. This is the 100th episode of The News According to Me. Quite remarkable, I might say, that I've made it this far with this show. And pretty much for the most part, two a day. Peachy. I do two a day, and Rabbi Rick again will not be attending today. His job is really getting in the way. They give him all this work to do. I don't understand what that's all about. My understanding is you're not supposed to do that anymore. Good news is, though, he's getting a raise. They're gonna raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. So he's looking forward to that big raise he's gonna get. Yeah. Now, how does that work? So if a guy makes, you know, a guy goes to college, gets a good paying job, and relatively speaking, percentage wise, you know, $50,000 a year. So let's say that, you know, a new guy starting out making $40,000 or $50,000 a year in the career that he went to school for. Let's say that happens, like an engineer. You know, you start off as an apprentice or whatever you're going to do, go to engineering school. You spend, you know, whatever it is today. Back in my day, I think it was like 80 grand. Now it's probably, I don't know, who knows? Back in my day, I think you could get an aviation career degree for like 84, 85, under 100 grand. I didn't do that. I went to the airport and just learned how to fly. That's what I did. I'm one of the rare birds out there. I had an airline career, got into an airline job, and I did not have a college degree, not even a bachelor's degree. Got to tell you, that's pretty rare in that field, especially back when I got a job back in the 90s. They took a chance on me, and it paid off. They got one of the best employees that has ever walked the face of the earth, according to me. That's, yeah, my opinion. But I never scratched an airplane, so I guess that's got that going for me. Never scratched a person or an airplane. There were a few people I wanted to claw their eyes out, but I restrained myself. It was possible. Yeah, I don't think there was ever an FAA incident report that I had to fill out the whole time I was there. Now, I left for many years, and I went back, by the way. That's why I talk about it in the past tense as well as the present tense. And the past tense again, because I left again on... here's the deal. I'll just share this story with you. I went back to I was at a regional airline, and I got hired, and I worked there for about... I was a captain on a small regional jet for about 7 years. And it was a good job. I liked the people I was working with. I liked the company that I was working for. And it was going through some growing issues, management changes back then, things were not as good when I left as they were when I started there. It was an amazing company when I started there. It was really, really, you would have thought you were working for a major airline. It was just, the place was incredible. And, or maybe it was just seemed like it because of the way I, or what I came from. I was working for charter operations and corporate operations that were, the last corporate job I had before I went to the airline was excellent. I was flying with a guy who was a first class individual, a gentleman beyond belief. He was an ex Marine pilot who used to fly when he was back in the Marines. He flew F-4s, the Phantoms, off of a carrier in Vietnam. The guy, you know, nothing could rattle him. The only time I ever saw him rattled was once we would fly. The airplane we had was a corporate jet, small jet. And, it was the Navy actually used to fly these particular aircraft. Now we'll get into all that stuff, but it was a corporate version of that aircraft. And we flew it all over the country. And the only time I ever saw him freak out was a couple of times we had, we could fly that thing up to 55,000 feet. It was quite the machine. And it was actually, the Navy actually flew him up to 65. At least that's what they were rated at. That's what they would fly him to. And they used him for certain things. They claimed they used him for certain operations, and we know they used him for other things, but that's beside the point. We'll get into all that stuff. The aircraft was just built like a tank. Thing was incredible. It was very loud, burned a lot of fuel, but once you got up there, it sipped the fuel and zipped right along. Had the old straight jets on it, just still wasn't turbofans. So we had a lot of fun with that plane. It was a good airplane. Really, really good airplane to fly. We ended up getting, I think we took it up to 45 or something one time, or whatever we were. We were up there in the 40s, somewhere upper 40s. And, of course, at that altitude, you can, you know, normally when you look up from the ground, you see contrails. Some people would call them chemtrails. They're not, we didn't put any chemicals on our airplane other than fuel. So I don't know if, you know, somebody put something in the fuel, sure. But we'll have that talk. You can go to my conspiracy theory channel and listen to that whole story. We had, we went to this, we were up there about 45,000 feet. The first time I saw him do this, and you can see contrails below you. There's air, you know, up so high that aircraft below you are putting out contrails. You can see the trail before you can see the airplane. So, you know, that's how far up we were. And I look over and I see him. He has this kind of sheepish look on his face. I've never seen this look on his face before. And he's kind of looking out the window, looking back at, you know, things and looking at the window. And I think I just happened to catch him in that moment that I said, what's going on? He goes, you see that contrail down there? He goes, that's exactly what a SAM looks like when it's coming up at you. So he had a little flashback at that moment. And that's the only time I've ever seen him kind of get rattled about anything. Now, he was a very detailed guy, very meticulous. Was very careful with the airplane and did a lot of maintenance. He was very good with maintenance. We had our own maintenance guy that did our own stuff, and we'd take it to another place to have some certain things done, but for the most part, it was our mechanic that did everything. So it was a fun job. That was the job I had right before I went to the airline. Before that, I was flying for some charter operations and some places that just they had some really interesting reputations. I never really had any problems with them. I did resign from the one spot because of the way they treated me, but I had a job 2 days later, so that wasn't a big deal. But in fact, somebody came knocking on my door to hire me. So I didn't miss out too much there. The amazing thing, though, is that A lot of these back in the day, a lot of aviation companies were. It was a struggle to make a charter operation work. You had to watch your pennies to make it successful. You know, the best way to start to make $1 million the best way to get $1 million in aviation is to start with 2 million. And you see what I'm getting at there? You're going to lose $1 million, but because aviation is just a tough business. And I have had an aviation business before, and it was a tough business. So I got into this airline thing and ended up as a captain pretty quickly because of all the flight time I had and my experience and everything. And then I started a business of my own right before the 2008 thing hit. I started the business in 2006. By 2007, I had gotten out of the airline industry, went into the business full-time, gave it full crank, thought I'd get into it full bore at that age that I was. Thought, you know, I can still recover if I screw up. So I got into that and pretty much poured everything into it. All of my time, money, effort, everything went into that. Thinking that it was going to be, if I made it, that it would be an investment in my future. I would have a business that would be worth something, worth a whole lot more than my 401k that I cashed in to do that. Took a hit on that to cash it in, but it was capital that was needed. I didn't borrow any money other than I had some credit card debt. I didn't go to the bank and say, "Hey, I need $100,000." It was, I was floating things back and forth and keeping the cash flowing. I kind of built the company up from its own bootstraps. So cash that would flow in was cash I was using. Well, it was kind of like a Ponzi scheme, basically. I did a Ponzi scheme on my own business. Kind of fooled my own business into thinking that I had money. And I was selling a product, and I had something I had invented, and it was in the marine industry, and it was going, you know, it was taking off. I was selling this product all over the world. Went to Australia, went to Ireland. I didn't go to Ireland, but I sold some in Ireland. I did go to Australia to the boat show there, Sydney Boat Show, and it's pretty fascinating. The 2008 economy hit. Along with that, I was having some product manufacturing issues. The company I had here in the United States building the motors for me, they told me they were building them to my specifications. And these motors were not being built to my specifications. And these little motors that were part of this package thing. Well, they were pretty expensive. And it cost me dearly to replace the parts and replace the motors, which... You know, on top of that, you're just starting out, your reputation's critical. And on top of that, you know, you have the 2008 economy just tanking and the marine industry basically shut down. It went from where it was, it went down 20% of what it was. Much like what this COVID thing did to the aviation world. So needless to say, it was a good time to shut the place down. So I shut it down and started doing other things. Kind of went through a time period of trying to do different businesses and trying out some different things. I've got more magnetic signs for the side of my car than, I mean, I could cover my entire car with magnetic signs on all the businesses I tried to put together. And then I, you know, came up with this podcast, and here I am with fame and fortune. No, I do other things. There's some other things I do that are actually, I make a living doing, and my wife makes good money doing what she does. So we're doing okay in our later years. Never would have thought we'd be in a position we're in today. Actually, when I was a kid, when I was younger in my 20s or 30s, never thought this position would, that I'd ever be here. The interesting part of that is that you never know where life's going to take you, but I was kind of helping my dad in his later years. I don't know why I'm waxing nostalgic here, telling you all about my life. Maybe it's because I've been listening to the whole thing about Rush and his legacy. And I got to say, that's been kind of a downer for me this week. As much as I appreciate who he was as a person and how inspiring he was, I'm still sad about it. And it's just got me down. I'm going to miss him every day. It's just one of those things. It was just a part of life, you know, being able to hear him help to formulate the thought processes of the conservative. He could articulate things in a way that, you know, it's kind of like, I knew that, I felt that way, I knew that was true, but he had a way of articulating it in a way that helped me define it. And of course, after that goes on for a number of years, you start to understand the thought pattern and the route to get you from point A to point B in that process. And it's absolutely precious. It's absolutely priceless. And it's not that you have this pie in the sky, ignore the problems positivity. You can look the problem square in the face. You can talk about the problem square at it. I mean, you can just recognize the problem, talk about it, and call it what it is. But you know that's not the end. You can move on from that. You can say, okay, this is what is happening right now. This is what can become of it. And I think Rush had a way of bringing us back around to look at the positive side of what could happen in the midst of that. Even in his dying, one of his last few shows, he was saying how, you know, just getting the diagnosis that he got and how difficult it was. He was in denial for a little while, but he said, if so many things that happen in life that seem to be bad, if you just wait, you know, the good in it will reveal itself. I'm paraphrasing. I'm not as articulate as he is, but he said, just if you just are patient and wait, you will find the good in what has happened. And I think Rush really, he was known as kind of a, and when he was younger, he was pretty cocky and had a more verbose kind of attitude. I think over the years he, you know, just life itself and God just kind of honed his humility and turned him into the person that he was at the end. And I think he stepped out of this life with grace. He ended well, in my opinion. Whether his lifestyle was something I agree with and all that, I don't know. I don't know what his faith, I know he's a believer. I know that morally he believed in many of the things I believe in. But I know his brother, I agree with a lot of things that his brother, express. However, Rush wasn't terribly upfront about his faith. He wasn't in your face about it. But I think in those final days, I think he was really, he was just grateful for every day that he woke up and really saw life for what it was, cherished life itself. And I think that's a big part of who God is. You know, it just amazes me as I get older. You know, when I was a kid, I could shoot a squirrel. I could shoot a rodent. I could shoot a ground squirrel. And it wouldn't bother me a bit. I had a rodent in my yard or something, I could shoot it. That has changed in me. That is life that can never be replaced. And it's a fascinating, life is a fascinating thing. From animals to even the smallest of flies and gnats. It just fascinates me. And humans can do a lot of things. We can send a mechanism automatically flying to Mars, land, send back pictures and audio. but we can't create life on that planet. We, you know, it would be, we can't even create something like a fly. Oh yeah, sure, we can clone something. That's, you're cheating. You're copying something. Come up with it on your own. Get some dirt and some leaves, some glue, a hot glue gun. Some of you makers out there, let's see what you can do with a fly. Not to a fly, but to make a fly that can reproduce. So, anyway, enough said about that. Where was I going with the whole aviation story thing? So then I did leave aviation for about 12 years. I was still flying privately, somewhat. I was off and on a member of a club for a while, and flew that for a couple of years, flew little Cessnas and stuff around. And the next thing you know, there's this pilot shortage, and it's going nuts. They're hiring anybody. So I happened to send a little email to somebody. And I said, hey, you know, if you'll hire me back, if you want to give me my seniority number back and put me back in as a captain, I'll be happy to come back. They kind of laughed. And I was kind of joking at that. I knew that the seniority thing wasn't going to happen. That's a union thing. We can't change that. But they did say, hey, you know, we are based here again, and you're already qualified as a captain, and you can probably, because now these rules are that in 121 flying and in airline flying, a person has to have 1,000 hours of airline experience before they can get into the captain seat. Well, I had that. I had like 6,000 hours of airline experience. So I could jump right into that seat, and I could go past a lot of guys in seniority. So that was a big plus. And by the time I got through with ground school and had all that done and started in the simulator, I was actually flying in the left seat already. I was actually awarded captain before they slowed me down in my training a little bit. They kind of hesitated because they didn't want me to just go through as an FO and then turn right back around and go, because they saw it coming. When I got done with some of my ground school training, they said, okay, guess what? Next alignment, you're going to be captain. Okay, so they threw me over to left seat. And they gave me quite a bit of extra time. It had been 12 years since I've been it was the same airplane that had flown before, but it was, just 12 years is a long time. And jumped back in and went through the program. And there you know. Well, what do you know? I was a reserve captain for a long time because, in fact, I was a reserve captain when I left. Because when I went on voluntary furlough. And here's the thing. This is the whole reason for the whole story. When there was a pilot shortage, it was all fun and games. And it was easy enough to jump in and feel like I was helping out. Because they didn't have enough captains. They couldn't, you know, because they had to have, these guys all had to have 1,000 hours. They were able to hire people, but they couldn't make captain. And they had to be there for almost a year and a half before they got enough flight time to actually be a captain. And by that point, it was such a pilot shortage that the majors were hiring them out. You know, the big guns, United and Delta and American, they were hiring everybody. And then you got all the cargo guys. So by the time these guys would qualify to be captains, some of them were already gone. A lot of times before they qualified to be captains. And so the whole captain thing was a commodity. It was something that they needed badly. And I didn't have any plans to go anywhere else. I wasn't going to go to major at that. At my age, I don't have that many years left. I have to retire at 65 and I don't have that many. I got a few years left, but not that many. I didn't want to make that lateral move. So I took on the job and was flying like crazy because they were flying reserve captains like crazy just because there wasn't enough captains. And so I was flying 5 days a week, 5 days and off three, five on, and I was flying every day. I was never home. I'd leave the first day and I was gone for 5 days. Normally on reserve, you're flying maybe 3 days, sometimes four. But this was you were gone. Yeah, I never saw my domicile when I show up for, after I showed up for work, which was, I mean, it was good. I got good pay for that. You get, you're working a lot of extra hours. You're getting good pay out of that. So fine with me. I was gone. Might as well be out flying. It makes you tired, but it's, you know, by the fifth day, you're ready to go home. You're just kind of wore out. When you're physically fine, you're mentally fine. It's just, you're tired of being gone. And that's the one part about the job I don't like, being gone. So I ended up, and I was while I was doing this, and the reason I went back was because I was helping my dad out with his real estate company. I had got my real estate license, my broker's license, and all that stuff, and went back, and I was helping him kind of finish up his business. After he passed away, and then I kind of tried to help close it down. Took about a year, and then my mom needed to go to a facility, so it took, we got that straightened out finally. Some other things happened, and so it just, the, you know, it was down to just doing my voiceover business and tinkering around my shop here. And I was doing some stuff in video and some other things. It was some small projects, but mostly it was the voiceover business. And and that was going very well. I was building it back up, and it was, because I had done a little bit before I had gone back to, I've done it on and off over the years. It's now become a much bigger business, even in spite of COVID. It's been a good business to have. Well, I make better money. I'll be honest. I make better money at voiceover than I do working for the airline. And the thing about it was, and this is where I knew what the job was. So I said to myself, you know, self, how you doing? I decided that because of the nature of the business, you know, you're in a hotel quite a bit. You know, you fly around all day, and then you end up in a hotel somewhere, and then you go fly around again, and you end up in some other hotel. And I can carry my stuff with me. I can carry, you know, the way that technology is now, you can carry microphones and recorders with you, or a laptop, or whatever you got. And if you work in the middle of the night when nobody's making too much noise, or early enough in the morning, you can usually get a quiet time to do some auditions and do some work. And sure enough, I was able to do quite a few jobs while I was on the road. And that was my thinking was, you know, I can go back to flying and have fun doing that, doing a job that I like to do, help out the company. And I can end up taking along my little voiceover business here with me still do this. And it did put a dent in it. It was hard to grow that business and continue to get, keep clients that were repeat clients, because sometimes they would, you know, I'd do a job for them and then I'd be gone for 5 days and I couldn't simulate the quality of my studio here, the fixed studio. If they needed anything else right away, or if somebody, you know, called me out of the blue and said, hey, we need this turned around today. And if I was flying all day, there was just no way that was going to happen. So it does get in the way of that a little bit, you know, but the good part about that was I was being at least compensated for flying. So I was, my job, I was at least taking care of that. Then this COVID thing hit. And all of a sudden, all these guys are, you know, they're talking furloughs. And initially, of course, there was some legislation that, you know, kept us working, but, you know, sent people home, paid to stay at home. So I took that. And then there were after the furloughs started happening, I started flushing people back out of the system. Well, I didn't have enough. I had enough seniority. I could have stayed, but I was going to be a first officer. I was going to go back to the right seat. And frankly, the pay there is substantially less than a captain position. And that's when I decided that, well, for one thing, there's a shortage of pilots, or there's no shortage of pilots anymore. You know, there's companies that are laying off, companies going broke. Now, eventually, it's my belief that, you know, 2 years from now, they're going to be begging people to fly again, paying them for, you know, sign-on bonuses again and all kinds of stuff, probably crazier than it was. I think that it will be crazier than it was because people will be reluctant to get into aviation as a career because of what just happened. There's a lot of guys that are out there right now that have found other jobs, and they probably won't go back to aviation. So, and the pool is going to be shallower than it was before in terms of the pilot pool. The workforce is going to be even less. And it's just a matter of time before this opens up again. And of course, now some people say, well, no, everybody's doing Zoom now, and that's the way it's going to work. I don't see that happening. I'm a business guy. I understand the power of meeting face to face, the edge that gives you over your competition. If you've never met anybody from that company and you've only talked to them on Zoom, and somebody shows up at your door from another company and they establish that human connection, that relationship with them, you now have an edge as a business servicing that company. I guarantee you. Because those kinds of relationships run deep. And it's the Zoom thing can work for a while. And it will save I think a lot of people will be able to operate that way to some degree. But trade shows are trade shows for a reason. And people travel for business for a reason. Salesmen meet with clients for a reason. This whole virtual thing does not always cut it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But I think overall we're going to see the companies that walk out of this situation smartly, with an intelligent step out of it to spend wisely in terms of their travel plans. I think those are the companies that will win the day. They're going to be the long-termers. And I'm sorry for that. I should probably turn that. There we go. Let's turn that off. So I've said all that to say this. There's a lot of young guys with aviation careers. They don't have a second job. They don't have a gig on the side. Or this actually aviation was my side gig. And I can't stand the thought of being in the way of somebody else's career like that. It was fun to be there. But it's not my thing. It's not the thing that I need for to survive. And there's a lot of young guys out there that have families, and they studied their whole life, and they wanted to be an aviation guy, and they or gal. And here's this old codger coming in out of nowhere, stepping in the way. And some guy who doesn't need the job, he just wants to take it from me. I can't stand being that guy. So, I'm not going to be that guy. And with the new legislation, they have just called me back. Now, because I was on voluntary furlough, I don't think I'm going to most of the guys will get back pay. The guys that were forced to take furlough, they will get back pay if they show up. I probably will not see that. Not positive, but because I was voluntarily furloughed, I don't think I'll be qualified for the back pay to December 1st. However, they will pay me. They have to get me recurrent again, and they have to. I have enough seniority; I can hold a position and stay on. I won't want it to get furloughed again, theoretically. However, I'm not so sure that. How that's going to work. Now, by the time they get me online, it'll be the end of March. Well, they'll be training through the first part of March, so I'll be probably sitting, paid to sit at home for the rest of March. And then by the end of March, the legislation runs out. And the way this particular, these legislators are working with each other, the way they happen to be operating right now, it's questionable as to whether or not they will extend get it extended. And here's the problem. They have to decide how they're going to furlough everybody again. They have to give them furlough notices right now. Of course, I won't get one, but they're supposed to furlough everybody. And this is where the politicians don't understand some industries out there, and they try to make these rules, and they try to do this stuff, and they don't realize how they're screwing up, and the extra expense that it's costing everybody. Because here we go, they're going to train me to come back. They don't, they're going to try to do this. Well, the legislation runs out in March. Why don't they just make the legislation run until whenever? They get some kind of a deal where they can, qualify people and get them in. Just instead of giving some other country, $200 billion, pay these companies to do the job, get everybody back that realistically are harmed. Assign somebody to the airline industry who understands what's going on with the airline industry to make some recommendations on how they should, craft the bill so that it makes sense for these people. Because now they're going to spend this money getting pilots current again. Now, granted, we're going back to work, but there's no work to be done. The flying is not, you got 100% of your pilots back, but there's not 100% of your flying. So even if it's at 50%, there's some pilots going to be sitting around doing nothing and getting paid for sitting around. And then by the time you get them online and get them current, because there's some training process that needs to happen there because you've been gone for 6 months since October 1st. So by the time you get all these people back online, the legislation runs out again. Now you're furloughed again. Are they just going to recall them again? Which they can. But you have to understand there's badges involved. There's security, checks. There's all you've got your company badge. You've got all kinds of aviation, your flight badge, your pilot badge. You got all this stuff you got to have, security stuff. Your parking passes, all that stuff's got to go away. You can't just walk out the door and, go home with that stuff when they furlough you. We're not working for the company anymore. All this stuff has to get turned in. And then you have to spend time getting all that stuff back in line again. And it's time consuming. It puts a strain on the system that shouldn't be there. And this is all happening because they have no clue what's going on with aviation. So that's my rant. Boy, I went on for a long time with that whole story. There's got to be a reason why I've shared all that. Somebody out there got something out of this, I hope. If you did, feel free to text the show, 574-742-6748. That was a long story. So, there is stuff. There's other stuff going on in the news besides me. I don't want to make this about me, but I have, because it's the news according to me. And for some reason, I needed to just share that story with you. I don't know why, but hopefully that inspires you in some way. Or not. Whatever. I don't know. Maybe you've already tuned me out. Maybe you're not even listening right now. So if you're not listening, I'm going to talk about you. I'm going to say things about you. Yeah. The interesting news has happened today and in the last couple of days. I talked about Ro Khanna and his whole $15 an hour, the whole $15 minimum wage thing and how what he thinks about small businesses and who can't, people who can't afford to pay $15 an hour. I talked about that this morning. So if you want to hear about that, I'll just point you to the 99th episode of this podcast. The one I did this morning. And of course, there were some issues with what was going on with the phone records and that kind of thing with the FBI that we've now have discovered that they have emergency power to confiscate records without a warrant. I didn't say anything about this. However, or maybe I did mention it just a little bit, but it's... there's an interesting thing happening with Nancy Pelosi. And I think it's worth talking about. Well, in fact, the TNA to Me singers actually have a little ditty they put together about Nancy. I've played it before, but we'll play it now because it's kind of, well, Nancy's going to jail.
Nancy's going to jail. Nancy is going to jail.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nancy is going to jail.
Yeah, Nancy Pelosi she's on the teetering on some hot water here. There's a very good possibility. There's no chance in the world that she's going to go to jail. Don't worry, Nancy's not going to jail. However, she is in some hot water and she's trying to maneuver some things right now. She's finding out that it's like playing chess in the Capitol sometimes, and she's finding out that she can't move anything basically because her king's going to be she's kind of getting checkmated if she's not careful. But I guarantee you, she will not go to prison because she is in the ruling class, and no one is above the law except for those who create the laws. They're above the law. However, there's some other stuff happening. Yeah, so Nancy, we'll talk about that later. The Nancy was apparently is in charge of the Capitol security issues, and she's trying to stay out of the limelight on all that stuff, and trying to maneuver behind the scenes and blame it on everybody else, and ultimately they want to blame Trump. And there were even some people that were being questioned in the hearings, and of course they were saying some things about, well, we did this and we did that. And this one congressman, he goes, well, and who was the commander in chief on that day? They're like, what do you mean? Who's the commander in chief? Who's ultimately responsible? Well, who was the president on the day of the election? And the guy goes, Donald John Trump was the president. And it was funny to hear him say it because it was almost like he was proud of the fact that Donald John Trump was the president. It was to hear him say, like, he wasn't, he didn't just go Trump. He said President Donald John Trump or something like that. And you could tell he was not saying it in a derogatory sense. And the guy goes, the commander in chief, the guy who was in charge. That's who was in charge. He's the one responsible for the screw ups that happened here that day. Because he didn't put enough people there. He did request National Guard troops. He offered them several days before the 6th. So that was a bunch of baloney. It all comes down to this one message, this one email that apparently didn't get passed along up the chain of command, whatever they call it. And it didn't get passed on, supposedly, and they're trying to hang it all on that. But somehow that didn't happen, and so nobody up the chain knew what was going on. However, Josh Hawley was the one who stepped forward and basically said that, well, you didn't need to go up the chain. You have the authority under section such and such and such and such to do this, and you can. He kind of called him on it. So he said, you guys had responsibility to do that. So these guys are going to be thrown under the bus. That's what it amounts to. But I know that end of the day. Pelosi, and all you need to do is study. If you look, I've dug into more of what the Reichstag event was that happened in Germany. When you look at that event and what happened afterwards, and the way things unfolded months and months after that event, the way it was used. We are living the same thing almost verbatim of what happened then. I mean, it is a cookie cutter event. And we all know, I've seen more video now of people getting on bullhorns and saying, be careful, stay, you know, there's Antifa among us at the event when they were there at the Capitol building. There are instigators, there are Antifa, you know, be careful what you're doing. And this one guy, basically he said, he was in front of a whole bunch of people there at the Capitol building. He said, he goes, this is not good. So they're starting to destroy some things on the outside. They're trying to break in. He goes, take your families and go home. These people don't represent us. It's not a good time for us to be here. Take your families. And this guy was on a bullhorn. It wasn't, I don't know who it was. It wasn't, what's the guy's name? The guy who kind of set up the whole event. Got banned from YouTube. I can't even think of his name right now. Yeah, that guy. That guy. You know, you don't know the guy that talks like that. Alex Jones. Man, I can't think of his name. There you go. Alex Jones. It wasn't Alex Jones. Alex has kind of grown up a little bit in the last few years. But he, not much. I mean, I somewhat. But yeah, he was there that day. And he was kind of the one who was kind of the center of this whole thing, according to him. So he was telling everybody to go home as well. But that this bullhorn guy on the bullhorn that I heard wasn't him. And there were several people that were like booing the people who were trying to break in, and the crowds that were around there. They don't talk about that. You know, they didn't talk about that in the hearings at all, which is very disturbing. And some of the people that I respect, even in the Congress, were kind of starting to pick up some of the rhetoric about how the violent mob. There was some violence. There was some scuffles with police. There were some things that happened there that day. But this was no armed insurrection. And they still, Amy Klobuchar still testified. Well, she didn't testify. She was asking questions, but in the process, this is how they do it. They always, in the process of asking questions, they make statements. Sometimes there isn't even a question. They just make a statement, and then they look at you like you're supposed to answer the question and agree with them. And it's like, well, what's the question? You didn't ask me a question. So she basically said that three officers died that day, died because of the Capitol that day. One officer was killed because of injuries he sustained. We're talking about Officer Sicknick, which is now a flat-out lie. That did not happen. She said that yesterday. That did not happen. He did not get hit by he didn't get bludgeoned by a fire extinguisher. And his mother now has come out and said he wasn't injured in the Capitol thing. And one of the, it was the Washington Post or whatever it is, one of the publications that published the story initially has had to retract the story. Of course, they don't tell anybody that. So the Congress people don't even know that, apparently, because they're still asking questions and basing things like that on that. There's only one person that died that day that was involved in a violent event that was actually shot. And it wasn't a Capitol Police officer that shot Ashley Babbitt. It was a security detail person of some kind. Now, if you see, there's a couple different angles on this. There's a video, I saw a still picture that right before he shot the gun. And folks, he had no business shooting her. No business shooting her. And I just don't, it just, it, that whole thing makes me sicker and sicker every time I think about it, but that's what happened. So there's that. But if you look into the Reichstag incident in Germany before World War II, it is so parallel to what is happening right now that it is spooky. And of course, we have now a capital that is surrounded by fencing and military. What it looks like is it looks like a military takeover of our government. These people are surrounding themselves with military, surrounding themselves with fencing and security because they are so scared. And they're talking about keeping them there till the end of the year. And they're cracking down on anybody who they're actually asking the big tech to censor more people. They're talking about shutting down businesses that have anything to do with Trump. And Trump was supposed to be the Nazi. He was supposed to be the fascist. He was supposed to be this evil man, this evil monster that they were all afraid of. Oh, by the way, I guess there's a lot of people that are all upset now about Biden. And they're tweeting. I guess some of the tweets are actually ridiculous. They're like, this is the most pathetic presidency we've ever seen. These are Democrats who wanted Trump gone. Are saying that this is horrible. This is a horrible presidency. What's happening? Of course, now you got the kids in cages again at the border. They've opened up the same facilities that they, were telling Trump to shut down. The ones that Obama and Biden funded initially, the ones that they put up the fences, fenced in facilities. And at least, to her credit, AOC has at least come out and did one tweet about, this has got to stop. Doesn't matter what the administration is. But, you don't see her down at the border in her little white outfit pretending to cry in a, with the angle that they have the camera. You can't see what she's crying. She's just there at a fence and she's looking inside and she was actually at an empty parking lot. Wasn't anywhere near a facility or anything. But she had to, pose that one. But she's a poser. That's what a poser is. In case you're wondering. So she at least has come out and made a statement on Twitter. Because apparently that's the thing to do now. And so apparently people are pretty upset with Biden right now because of all the stuff that he promised and it's not coming through. And some of the stuff that's happening and all the, the stuff that's the policies that are being put in place. They're pretty upset about that. And in the midst of their tweets, they'll say, well, I know we got rid of Trump, but now we have this. And can you please explain to me exactly why you wanted to get rid of Trump? What is it? What is it? Just because you were told by the media, the same media now that's covering things up and shilling for this particular administration? They're not telling you even the half of what's going on. They're putting the positive spin on everything he's doing, not holding him accountable to anything. And by the way, who's really running the show, guys? We all know, and it's even coming out, even in the lamestream media, they're even saying, well, we know it's not that Biden's not actually running the show here, so who is running the show? Biden comes out and makes speeches. He's just reading from teleprompters. He's not formulating anything and talking about plans that he's making. He just calls it the administration. And he comes out and reads these statements. And then when you look at Circleback Psaki, the press secretary, they'll ask a question, she'll turn to a page. And I gotta hand it to Steve Ducey. He's like, so why are you guys putting kids back in cages? He didn't say it like that, but he basically asked the question. At least he's bringing up the question. And you can just tell she just doesn't want to deal with it. She doesn't like the guy. And so she's sitting there. Of course, she's not wearing a mask, even though it's required on government property now. You're supposed to wear a mask, but she's not wearing one. So she goes on and she starts talking. And she keeps looking down at her podium there because she's reading the answers. This is the weirdest made-for-television administration I've ever seen. It's everything is scripted. These are all actors. Who's large and in charge? I want to see Biden step into that podium one day. In the near future. Let's say this week. How about Joe Biden step into the press secretary's podium and start answering some questions? Well, now look. Come on, man. Come on. Now, no joke. I'm not a racist. Now, if you're in the inner city, you probably don't know how to get on the internet, to get online, to get in line. Because, you're just a... Go ahead and say it, Joe. I don't think Joe's racist, but the thing is, you know what would happen if Trump would have said something like that. But yeah. So hey, it's been an hour. This show's been going on. This is the 100th episode, and actually the TNA to Me singers were in today, and they did do a little ditty. They would like to. They'd be upset, I guess. They would. Their hearts would be broken if I didn't share with you what they worked so hard on today. Because it's really quite fascinating what they did. They just poured their hearts out today. So in light of that, I will go ahead and we will play the recording that they worked so hard on. They spent a lot of time on this. They spent weeks putting this together, knowing that this day would come. And here it is.
It's the news, according to me.
It's the news,
according to me. 100 episodes, 100 episodes of the news, according to me.
All right, that's enough. That's enough of that. That's enough. Yeah, we've had enough of that. These guys are... I gotta turn that off again. Thanks, everybody. I just want to appreciate that one guy. Like I said, that one guy was a little bit off on his what he was saying there. I was singing. I'm not sure. He's kind of a lone ranger doing his own thing. I'll allow it once in a while, just to kind of let the creative juices flow. But yeah. So once again, thanks, folks, for indulging me for 100 episodes that have passed, and especially for today. Let me tell my little story. Appreciate everybody that has listened and subscribed, shared this podcast with others, reposted it in different places for you, for the sake of spreading it around. And again, call into the show if you want to, and we'll continue to make this show what it is. See what the next 100 episodes look like. Hopefully some of the news will be a little bit better the next 100 episodes. So once again, folks, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing, sharing, being a part of this. God bless. Have a great night. And continue to pray for our nation, pray for our leaders. And we're all in this together. So let's just stay together, keep moving forward.
Episodes of the news, according to me.